Hello, I'm April Jones, and we at Jones Law Firm care about you, your family, and your well-being. That's why we've put together this informative webinar series to answer your questions about life, about the law, about your family. So thank you for joining us, and let's get started. Hi, everybody. April Jones here. Welcome to our webinar series. We haven't been with you for a while, so we're really excited to be here. Today, we are talking about divorce with kids, what parents need to know. So I've been an attorney 29 years. I've had Jones Law Firm in Colorado for 20 years. And so I am on with part of our fantastic family law team. Got David Collins, who you've probably seen before. And then we have Stu. I don't think we've had Stu on before. So I'm going to have them introduce themselves briefly, and then we will get right at it. The format today, if you have questions, just go ahead, ask us the questions, and we will answer your questions real time. And then we had questions that were sent in ahead of time, so we will be addressing those. We've got 30 minutes, so let's get after it. David.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dave Collins. I'm an attorney working with April Jones. I've been in the practice for 16 years, focusing on family law, child custody, child support, maintenance, step-parent adoption, and guardianship.
Thank you, David. Stu.
All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Stuart Wallace. I've been an attorney for 8 years. This is my first year with Jones Law Firm, and I'm happy to be here and help you all and answer your questions today.
Okay. Well, let's get right after it. Let's take one that ahead of time. When is the best time to tell kids that mom and dad are divorcing? Is there a right or a wrong way to tell them? And I would say, is there a good time to tell them? So David, what's the right time to tell kids?
You know, that's a good question. I the age of the children is going to be a factor and you know, in their ability to understand what's going on. Many of our clients tell us, after the fact that the kids were not surprised, children are aware of the relationship that's breaking down in front of them. That said, we always recommend to tell the kids as soon as possible. Even if you haven't, if you're going to divorce and you are going to separate, you can tell them before the household is dissolved to prepare them for that. Many people choose to go to a therapist and have work with a therapist to help the kids transition. And that's largely because children have a very romantic notion of marriage and relationships, and it's the only relationship in their life that will end. And so it's a novel experience for them when one ends, and it's very scary. And they need help understanding that even though mom and dad's relationship may be ending, that their relationship with their parents is not.
And one thing we do, we recommend clients to read certain books. There are books that are age appropriate. One of my favorites is It's Not Your Fault. It's Not Your Fault, Coco Bear. And it just kind of walks the child through what's happening. There's a book that has a mom and a dad in separate houses, but the house is big enough to have the three of them covered. And it's showing the child that he has a house with both of his families, you know, with two families, and he's loved the same as one family. So there's a lot of good books out there. Ask us if we're your attorneys and you're sitting in on this call, ask us for some of the references depending on the age of your child. And it's really important that you keep your child in mind. The standard of care for the court is the best interest of your child. The standard of care in your home is the best interest of your child. So if you have a child that is particularly emotional, or that is particularly analytical, or it's particularly intuitive, and they've been following this thing the whole time, and no matter how much you try not to say something, they intuitively know that something is wrong, you treat each of those children differently. But you know that because you're their parent. You're their best advocate. You're the one who loves them and knows their heart. So do what's best for your particular children. But you will need to figure out what that is. You will need to tell them, and you may need a third-party therapist. And there's a lot of resources out there, so let us know if we can help. I think it would be best to share custody with my wife, but she's been threatening to take the kids from me. Is it better to just go with what she wants so that there isn't some big custody battle that can harm the kids. Stuart, should you just go with what she wants so you don't have a big custody battle?
Well, I think you should consult with an attorney before you just agree to something. And it does depend on what mom wants. A lot of parents say mean things to each other during the divorce process, but if you retain an attorney and that attorney tells you that mom actually isn't asking for something crazy, and it makes sense to you that it's in the best interest of your child, it may well make sense to try to reach an agreement with mom, because reaching an agreement is the fastest and least conflict heavy and least expensive way to resolve a divorce case. But it really does depend on what exactly is mom asking for.
And courts will tell you that. And when you're sitting in front of the court in trial, they'll say, you know, it's better if you could resolve this case yourself. It's better you know your family, you know your children, you know what's important to you. You only get so many hours in front of the judge. So it tends to serve families much better if you can work to a point of resolution. And with the point of divorce being you're wanting to break up, you probably have issues with being able to resolve things amicably, but that's why you have attorneys. And that's why we sit down, we negotiate, we mediate, and we really can come up with the best resolution for your family without the drama and long-term effects of trial, you know, if it can be done. Sometimes it can't be done, and we go to trial, and we take the case, and we handle it that way. And that's fine. We're litigators. We love to litigate, but what we love most is for our client to get the best outcome for them. How can we make life better for our children after the divorce than it was before? I feel like they will always be missing one of their parents. David.
You know, that's a tricky question because, you know, it depends on what their life was like before. It is a difficult adjustment for a child to be in a household with one parent and another household with the other. It's also extremely difficult for a parent who has their child 50% of the time to be in an empty house 50% of the time. But children are resilient. Children bounce back. And I think my colleagues would agree that children, at the end of the day, thrive more in two separate households without conflict than one household where there's a lot of conflict. And so children adjust. One thing we often hear from our clients is that the child was very upset when they heard about the divorce until they went to school and talked to friends about it and found out, unfortunately, that a lot of their friends have been through the same experience, and it helps the child understand it's not unique to them, it's not their fault. I think that's one of the biggest transitions or parts of the transition that parents need to make with the children, is that the children understand that it is not their fault. It had nothing to do with them, and that it's okay for a relationship to end for mom and dad, but that doesn't in any way end the relationship with their parents.
And the fact that they have the two loving households, that's like the most important thing, that they have a place in each home. My son, when he was like 12, he was having music lessons, and he was playing music with a friend of his, that's what it was. And so I would drop him off, or the other parents would drop him off at my house. And so just one day, they were getting together for dinner, and it was at the little boy's father's house. And so I asked my son, I was like, and the mom took me aside and told me that they were getting divorced and that the dad had moved out. And I said, how was it? He's like, we had steak. It was great. Like, they just kept it moving. And it was really important that the dad and the son and his friends, what had been a ritual at the house when they were together, stayed a ritual at the house where they were separate. And I think a lot of mimicking rituals, mimicking things that show the child that life will continue and that life can be great, is very, very important. And you can build two strong, loving households, but you gotta not fight over child whole tears. That's a really important point. Does my panel agree with me about not fighting over the child for the whole time?
Yeah.
Does that change your answer, if the parents want to have a custody battle. The question is, can we make life better for our children after the divorce than it was before? What if they're keeping up with a custody battle? What's the answer? Does it change at all for you guys?
I think that parents, in a case where parents do continue to conflict, the important piece is that they don't put their child or children in the middle of that conflict by doing things like talking to their kids about what their mom or dad is doing wrong. Okay, what they need to keep their disputes between them. And not put the kids in the middle of it, really, regardless of the age of the kids.
That's right.
That's key to having a successful divorce and having a happy life after the divorce.
Right. And that remains the responsibility of the two parents. I mean, they might have to do a whole lot of tongue biting and a whole lot of to get through it. But that's part of the responsibility of a parent, to just try to keep the child, having a child's life and a child's responsibilities, and not shoulder the burden of two people that they love the most fighting like cats and dogs their entire childhood. So do not do that. If you need help with that, please call us. We're really big on trying to help our clients get to a better place in life and get to a place that they can co-parent happily with their children. What are some of the major differences between a divorce with kids and a divorce without kids? I'll just take that one. Without kids, you're talking about money, property, retirement, alimony, which is the same as spousal support. So you're talking about a lot of property issues. When you have kids, you're talking about all the same things plus children. So it adds a component of something that is like the most important thing in the world to people when they have their kids. But then your finances and your property is, you know, the most important thing in the world to people as well. So it just gives you, one has two components that are of supreme importance to the partner. When going through a divorce with kids involved, what are some of the major things to consider emotionally? David, why don't you go and then Stu, why don't you add?
I'm sorry. So emotionally, I think it is a very difficult emotional experience for children of any age. Not just because their parents are breaking up, but because they probably have observed a significant amount of conflict in the home leading up to the divorce and the separation. And so for the child, which I think is the focus of today's call, a lot of children will blame themselves or will have a very romantic notion that their parents are breaking up, but they'll be back together by Valentine's Day or for Christmas or by their anniversary. And so I think our overwhelming theme is, if you think your child is suffering emotionally because of the separation or the divorce, that it's okay to seek professional help, to have them be able to speak with a therapist or a counselor in a safe setting about what they're feeling. And they may be mad at both parents and may be afraid to tell both parents how upset they are or how guilty they feel. Children can blame themselves for a parent's divorce. And so there's no shortage of emotion in divorce. I think what we see, unfortunately, is a lot of parents focusing on their own emotion and not the emotion of the children. And children can be the biggest victims in divorce and have the hardest and longest recovery.
And it's a hard thing because the parent, to give credit to the parent, I mean, your love relationship, your life that you plan to do forever is ending and terminating and breaking. And it happens in a lot of different ways. Some are your idea. Some is something that happened to you when somebody left you. So the parent is going through something that is like an incredibly hard time. It's just, you have to also, you know, care for the children. If you've ever lost a parent or lost somebody that caused you as an adult to be really sad, but you still have to continue to parent, it's that type of thing. So it's hard. And we don't want to take that away. And I do want to just put that out there. It is hard. But to just kind of piggyback on what David's saying, there are therapies, there's group therapy, there's books, there's a lot out there to help get you through it, get your children through it. You do not need to go through it alone, and you do not need to have your children be in a situation where they have to go through it alone. I'm going to take a live question. In your experience, how does the court respond when a teenager, 15 to 18 years, resists or refuses to spend time with a parent when it is that parent's parenting time? I'm just going to interrupt this question and say, we see that all the time. Do we see that all the time, David?
I just had a case in the last month. Yep. Yeah.
I'll keep reading it. What if the parent who the child is resisting has yelled and thrown things at the child in the past? How does the court respond to this? Will the court look to recommendations for the child's therapist? This is a really, I mean, you can imagine if children are, I mean, how many children end up being teenagers in a divorce situation? And you know how teenagers are complicated, even in the best of circumstances. We get this a lot, and it is a hard thing. And I'm going to break the question up because the answer is different if your child is 15 than if your child is 18. I'll just start with 18. If your child is 18, they're adults, and the court ultimately isn't going to tell the 18-year-old what to do with respect to parenting time. Does my panel agree on that?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about our 15 or 16 or 17-year-old. And they're still very different because it's based on the maturity of the child, right? So a 15-year-old, I tell people that if you want to come in and you want to try to control what your child is doing as they're a teenager, I mean, kind of at 15, you're at the end of your best opportunity to make a difference with your 15-year-old. So, because you're running out of time. I liken it to a track meet where they're running and you're coming up toward the end and there's the guy coming along and he could pass you, but you run out of track. And so he loses. You are running out of track with the 15-year-old because every day they're older. And when they're 16, some courts aren't entertaining cases about 16-year-olds, but some are. The same for 17-year-olds. Some courts will absolutely say they're 17, but some will entertain it. It's only when they're 18 that you can have an absolute. So the point is the age matters because it's really shortening your opportunity and opportunity of the court to get in there and intervene and make a difference. Now, to go more into your specific question, you have a parent who is inappropriate with the child. That matters. Stu, what are your thoughts on a 15, 16, 17-year-old not wanting to go with their parent who has thrown and yelled at the child in the past, thrown things and yelled at them?
Well, I think that it in part depends upon the extent of the bad behavior by the parent to whom the child doesn't want to go. Yelling and throwing things, okay. That could be emotionally or physically damaging to the kid, even a 15-year-old. And there are certainly things we could ask a court to do to modify a parenting time plan if, in fact, a parent is behaving that way. And if you and your child feel that it's emotionally or physically damaging to the child to be spending time with that parent. There are many options or buckets into which we could drop that for a judge. And it is important. And I think that it's important to consult with an attorney about the specifics of your case and what exactly is going on when your son or daughter is with the other parent.
Right. David, what do you want to add?
I think just on the outer edge of that inquiry, if you think your child is in harm's way or that a parent is inappropriate, you can ask the court to, one, restrict the parenting time if it's putting the child in imminent danger of emotional or physical harm. And if you don't think that, but you think, you know, that it's not a healthy environment, you can ask the court to appoint what's called a child and family investigator, and they'll conduct an investigation into both households and determine, you know, if it's in the best interest of the child to maintain parenting in both households. And sometimes they'll say, you know, there was some yelling in the house, but we recommend that the two go to counseling or therapy together to help resolve the issues that they're having. We do see this a lot where, for example, at dad's house, there are no rules. Homework never has to be done. They don't necessarily have to get up on time to go to school. They're tardy and they have chores, but they don't have to do them. And then at mom's house, you know, mom makes them do their homework and mom makes sure they go to school and mom makes them clean up. And so the 15 to 17 year old who's older but not mature wants to live at dad's house where there are no rules. And in those cases, the judge usually says, we're not going to, you know, the child is 15, but they're not mature enough to decide. They don't really get to choose because their decisions are based on immature standards. And that's really the truth. While children get older, it's important. It's really maturity that the judge is going to look at to see if they're really making an informed decision about choosing which parent they want to spend their time with.
And that's not a gender thing. I mean, we have moms who, the same thing. Dave was just giving that as an example. We'll have moms who just want to be, I was just giving an example, just want to be friends with the kid and let all the other kids come over and let them get high in the basement. And dad wants, you know, no part of that or won't let the daughter have the boyfriend spend the night. And so she wants to be at the house where her boyfriend can come and spend the night with her. So it can get very complex quickly. And the maturity of your child is a key. The facts of your unique case are keys. So it's not something that, it's something that I believe you're going to need an attorney to help you with because it's so nuanced. When you get into that 15, 16, 17 year old range and you're talking about maturity, you're talking about, you know, how do you even force a child if you decide that they should not have, that they should have parenting time with the other, how are you going to force your 15 year old to do it? Is the court going to order you to take away all privileges? We've seen that before where the court orders the one, let's say the mom, to take away privileges if the child won't go. I've seen the court say, I can't make this child go. What do you want me to do, arrest the child, Ms. Jones? So it really, really varies from court to court, judge to judge, case to case. Make sure you see an attorney and figure out what's the best path for your family, because you might need to file an emergency motion to restrict depending on what's happening, because I don't know what he threw. I don't know what he yelled. So talk to an attorney. We could definitely help you. If you need us, we're at DenverDivorceAttorneys.com, divorce attorneys with an S, and any of the team can help you kind of decide what's best. So you don't need to go through it alone, and you don't need to stay up at night wondering. You know, let's just talk about it. Let's see. Can the parents agree to a parenting plan on their own, or is it always left to the judge to decide for them? And I think we talked about this at the beginning. Yes, you can come up with a parenting plan on your own. Those are the best kind when you have two sensible parents, two reasonable parents, the kind you come up with on your own, and judges love that. Now, they will not, they still, it's still up to the court to decide to grant it or not. So if it's something far-fetched, the court cannot grant it. But yes, coming up with a parenting plan on your own is the absolute best thing when you can make good decisions with the other party for what's best for your particular family. I'm going through a divorce with my husband, and I've been in my stepkids' life for 10 years. Their mother and father share custody. Is there any way that I get have time with him too, or does that all change once the divorce is over? David, what about step-parents? Step-parents been around for 10 years.
So there is an avenue where a someone who's been involved in a child's life, in Colorado it's for at least the prior 6 months, in this case it's 10 years, where that step-parent may be able to try to assert that they're a psychological parent of that child. I apologize, my phone rang, so I think it's audio. But what I was saying is that in Colorado, there is a statute that recognizes what's called a psychological parent. And we often represent people in these cases. They have cared for a child either as a step parent or as even just as a live-in girlfriend, but they've helped raise somebody's child for 5 years, or a grandparent for that matter. And in this particular facts, because it appears to be a child from a prior relationship, this step parent may be able to file into those former divorce proceedings to seek allocation of parental responsibilities as a psychological parent. Much easier battle if the biological parents aren't fighting it. but also entirely winnable even if they do, because the courts recognize the importance of maintaining those bonds with the people that have played a parental role in the life of the child. And with these facts, someone who's been basically a step parent for 10 years, they are a core parent in the life of that child, and the court will likely want to sustain that contact and give them some kind of parenting time.
A question that we get all the time is, can my child decide who to live with? Or the other version of that is, when can my child decide who to live with? Stu?
Well, so the short answer is, it depends, and often a child does have a preference. And in various circumstances, that preference will be considered as a factor by the court. And obviously, it's a practical factor for the parents. But it is not the only factor. And I have not seen judges determining primary parental custody based entirely on a child's decision. And in fact, my impression is that most of the judges in the Denver metro area give less weight to that factor than other factors. Kind of as David said before, because even a 15-year-old isn't really mature enough to decide things for themselves, and may well be deciding that they want to spend time with one particular parent because that parent is more fun and less rules oriented. And this has been coming up a lot lately during the coronavirus because of remote schooling, and parents are having disputes about whether or not the other parent is facilitating their children's or their child's remote schooling effectively. And obviously teenagers may not prefer to do remote schooling. And so it's coming up in cases a lot right now.
And some parents are more adept at being teachers than others. I saw a meme where this woman was like, I'm not a teacher. You know, I'm not a lunch worker. I'm not a bus driver. I'm not, you know, she's like, where is the teacher? So you're going to get a type of angst in parenting potentially that you don't normally have when you're not in a pandemic situation where people are being required to manage teaching at home. And I'm finding the courts to be more forgiving about that sort of thing than they typically would be, because it's just kind of, you know, everybody's just trying to figure it out. You know, dad's letting them watch television more and do homework less. Mom's letting them bring kids over to play, and the kids should have COVID exposure. Like, there's just so much that the country's got to manage right now. We actually did put out a COVID parenting guide. We put it out during the middle of the pandemic, and it really walks people through some of the things to think about when you're trying to make parenting decisions that are affected by COVID or escalated even by COVID. But the wishes of the child is a factor. You'll see the court reading the factors at the conclusion of a trial and say, okay, the wishes of the child testimony was that the child wants to be with mother more. Child 5, the court's going to disregard that. You know, so there's that sort of thing where it's based on maturity. And one example I give clients is, think about when you would let your child stay home alone and for how long. Would you let your 10-year-old stay home alone while you went to the store? Depends on the 10-year-old. Would you let them stay home alone for 8 hours? Probably not. You shouldn't. Would you let your 17-year-old? Depends on the 17-year-old, but probably. So it's that type of analysis. When would you let them stay home, and how long would you let them stay home alone for, is kind of a way to judge the maturity of your child. All right, we have time for one more question. And I want to ask something that we haven't answered, because a lot of this, we've had a lot of questions. So look at the answer. Even if we didn't ask your particular question, it's the same type of answer. You know, do what's best for your child. Do what's best for your family. Try to resolve things with as little conflict as you can. Get them therapy if you need it. What advice do you have for parents in general navigating a divorce with children? What is your one piece of advice, David?
Be flexible and be, you know, give a little. It's a very difficult transition. You can find a way to fight over everything, their socks, their underwear, who gets their mattress, who has to buy a new bed frame for the kid because they're going to be in a new house. And all of this puts the child in a difficult position. So our advice, especially around the children, is be flexible, reach compromises, put the children first, make agreements so you guys can cover each other. Even if you already have a separation agreement and you're following it before the divorce, you're going to need favors from each other. Someone's going to be late from work. Somebody's going to want to take a trip. Somebody's going to want to change the schedule in some way. And be willing to do that. You know, even though you're giving a favor today, you're going to co-parent with your ex-spouse for years to come, and you'll need a favor. So our advice is to be as flexible as you can, to co-parent, to make it as easy as your child, for your child, as it can be for them to transition into an entire new life of living in two households.
Thank you, David. Stuart.
I second what David says, and I think that most important is hire a good attorney and make sure that attorney knows what your priorities are, because there are so many issues in a divorce, as David suggests, about which you could fight. And it's not worth it to fight about all of them. And what you will do in consultation with a good divorce attorney is identify your priorities, identify the issues about which you should fight, and the issues about which you shouldn't, and focus on the things that matter most to you and your children. Because without doing that, your divorce can get messier and more expensive than it needs to be.
Absolutely. Thank you, Stuart. My last piece of advice is keep your children out of it. Take the high road when you can. Your ex could be just an absolute idiot. Having a child here, that the person that you are half made of is an idiot, and you are like your father or you are like your mother, it's not what you would want for your child. And if you could see, being in business 20 years, I've had clients' children be clients. And if you could see into your child, if they were translucent and you could see what this was doing to them, you would never do it. You would just stop. If you could actually see what it does to them to just be put in the middle of crap, I would say. So my advice, again, take the high road, keep the child out of it. If you want to call the other guy an idiot, let them, you know, wait till they go to school or they go outside or they go to grandma's and then call your friend and tell him he's an idiot. But don't use your child for that, because that is their parent. Okay? So we hope this has been helpful, and we look forward to seeing you in other webinars. Please share a webinar with anyone you know who might be going through a divorce with or without children. This webinar will be available on our podcast, so don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. It's called The Webinar Series. It's available everywhere, Apple, iTunes, everywhere. So DenverDivorceAttorneys.com. I'm April Jones. Find us on the web. Give us a call. We're here to help you. In the meantime, be well, be safe. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for joining us for this webinar. If you or someone you know would benefit from watching a recording of this webinar or any of our other webinars, they can be found at DenverDivorceAttorneys.com. Thank you, and keep a lookout for future live webinars, and I hope to see you again.